And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tam.
To be able to bring people together. What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to a tampering podcast. I'm hijacking Sam Amick's intro because, I don't know, I'm in Chase Center, and usually when I'm doing these podcasts deep in the bowels of Chase Center, it's for the Warriors All 82 or Warriors Plus Minus podcast, and I'm hosting. So I just felt comfortable hosting. But Sam Amick, this is a live version of tampering after a weird game four between the Warriors and Grizzlies.
Slater, you are taking over, man. So does that make me like I'm Ja Morant, I'm out? No offense, I'm giving myself all kinds of shine, and I'm kind of throwing shade your way because you would be Tyus Jones. Like, are you going to play 41 minutes tonight?
Just don't make me Dylan Brooks tonight.
To our guy Fred Katz, tampering co-host, who's going to be here in a moment. I'm sure this has been on Twitter at some point tonight, but he made me chuckle on Press Row this evening with his nickname for Dylan of Villain Brooks this evening. Not bad. Lots of booze.
Hardy booze.
Really
hard. Honestly, I didn't think the crowd was like too great until like it got good, you know, when it got tense. Maybe yeah. It was because, this might be a threatening game, they were starting to realize.
Right.
But the only times it felt good was when Dylan Brooks touched it. It was like, oh, there's the venom.
I will say, I feel like even though you're taking over as the lead man this evening, we should tell the non-Warriors Grizzlies crowd that on the back end of this pod, we had a very robust, fun, interesting conversation about the other series, about the MVP selection, Nikola Jokic, and the conversation about, you know, the playoff context for award winners and are they worthy, are they not, coach of the year as well. A surprise visit from Logan Murdoch of The Ringer. So that's the back end, but we are here late, like you said, you know, here Monday night?
It's Monday. Well, I don't know. All I know is I'm getting on a Southwest flight to Memphis tomorrow.
Game four, we're talking Dubs Grizzlies. I mean, listen, Ja's out, and I wrote a little bit about this in my notebook that I'm still kind of chipping away at. This Grizzlies team, Slater, without Ja, he's such an incredible dynamic player, but this game again showed this season-long trend of Memphis being a much better defensive team without him. This was an ugly slog of a game that the Warriors barely held on in. And Memphis almost got it. They kind of blew it away at the end. But, you know, they're a different team without him.
Yeah, I was walking around pregame, you know, talking to several people. And one of the important Warriors people who I talked to, you know, I was just, what do you expect from Memphis tonight? First thing they said, they're going to be harder to score against without Ja. You know, they just put up 142 in the easiest offensive performance we've seen in a long time. You know, from just statistically what they did the other night. Now, you bring Dylan Brooks back into the mix, and as bad as he was offensively, he just is their best perimeter defender. You take Ja out, you put Steven Adams back in, and I think they really committed to, like, you know, instead of trying to maybe run and gun with the Warriors with Morant at the helm, it was like, try to bully him, beat him up, try to slow down the pace of the game, hope they miss enough shots. Be, you know, long, active, force turnovers. They forced, 11 turnovers in the first, 14 minutes. And the Warriors missed plenty of wide-open shots, including Steph Curry, who's, by the way, him and Clay are not shooting well in this series. They missed their first 16 threes. That is the first time since 2011 in a playoff game.
Wow.
Do you know the team that did that in 2011?
Which year?
2011. No. West Finals.
Damn. 2011 West Finals. Tell me.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, young Thunder team against the Mavericks. That's the year the Mavericks beat them in the West Finals. Dirk. And
fun fact on the to finish the loop on the Grizzlies defensive front, and I know this is a small sample size. The first three games of this series, the Grizzlies defensive rating was seventh out of the eight remaining playoff teams. And the mark, which is escaping me, whatever the hell the mark is that I'm writing right now, would have been good for 30th in the league during the regular season below the Houston Rockets. So it's just, it's a trip. I don't know in recent memory really ever that we've seen a team that has two identities with and without its superstar. They, you know, and I'm not trying to imply that they can't defend with Ja. They just have to cover up for him. But it you know, they're 20-5 without this guy. So in that respect, Golden State getting this game and pushing this thing to 3-1 in the series is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was one of the Warriors' worst performances. But where you could tell they definitely missed Morant was late, right? Game two was really close, and Ja brought him home, you know, with what he scored, like the last, you know, 15, 17, whatever. The Warriors were able to kind of, you know, I guess, reel the Grizzlies in, because when it got crunch time late, defensive stops were needed. The Warriors could just get defensive stops because it was Dylan Brooks taking step back threes. Well, and
on the other side, they just keep scoring. I mean, you got 39, you know, in the fourth. That's the thing. That's the quandary of these Grizzlies. And I wrote that, I mean, I voted for Ja for most improved. He wins most improved. The scary part is he can still improve on that end quite a bit.
Don't ask Taylor Jenkins that, though. I asked him that. Remember what we talked about last week? He got defensive when I asked him. If you've
heard this about today's NBA, Slater, but it is a standard protocol to defend your superstar all day, every day, 8 days a week. That's what they do in today's league.
Before Fred joins us, because you know we should probably save some Grizzlies talk to when he's around, but let's go to the Warriors side and the Mike Brown part of the night. I mean, just what a strange day for Mike Brown. We can get into the fact that the Kings hired him. You know, that's a big storyline in Sacramento where Sam Amick resides. But not only does he get officially named head coach of the Kings tonight, but Steve Kerr tests positive for COVID. A few hours before tip, Mike Brown on his way to the arena learns, hey, you're not only the head coach of the Kings now, you're the head coach of the Warriors for a massive game four tonight. And from what I'm hearing, at least game five in Memphis. And, you know, again, he didn't captain the crispest night from the Warriors, but just it was just an interesting scene, wasn't it?
It was. And, you know, where do you fall? You know, Steph Curry tried his hand at humor post game.
Didn't work.
But so I watched the video. I'm going to sound like a Warriors shill for a quick minute. The Warriors are pushing back. They say that Steph got misinterpreted. I watched the video. And the thing is, he does smile when he makes a comment about how it felt like we were all traded to the Kings. I'm a little bit torn. There's part of me that feels like he did not, you know, completely say we played so awfully that we thought we were the Kings. That would have been, you know, a little more clear. But it was an inference for sure.
As somebody who's around them and knows how they all operate in press conferences, just as you are a lot, if that was Draymond who said it or, you know, Iguodala, I would be like, oh, that's a shot at the Kings. Because it's Steph who typically, like, he tries to veer away from, like, distasteful comments.
Right.
I believe him when he says, and he tried to correct it so post-game.
Like moment of truth or misinterpretation?
I think... I don't know, probably misinterpretation because he's believable when saying that. But, you know, end of the day, the funny thing is, even if it's misinterpreted, it's like it's correct, right? They kind of did play like the Kings, and it was kind of funny that Mike Brown was
everybody had jokes tonight. Not to make this a Kings podcast, but it was, hey, the Kings playoff drought has come to an end. Mike Brown is coaching. And then when they were losing, it was, oh, boy, is Vivek Ranadive going to watch this game and have second thoughts and maybe repeal the offer, you know, but Mike Brown steps up, does his thing. And to be honest, to add a couple layers, you know, to the Warriors performance, there was a lot going on tonight. You know, you had, you know, Draymond Green with a heavy heart with his Michigan State brethren, Adrian Payne passing away, you know, and he was emotional afterwards and kind of told us that I don't want to cry in front of everybody. So I'm going to go home and podcast, which is his outlet these days. So, you know, there was a lot. And add into that, the Steve Kerr stuff, you know, I think it was one of those nights where you could tell that, I mean, if you watch Steph at the end of the game, he is fist pumping, you know, and getting after it with Draymond and Klay in the kind of way as if they won the series.
You know what he said to Draymond? So Draymond, this is the game three in Denver. Draymond strips Jokic in isolation to basically send the Nuggets to the brink of elimination. That was the game three win to go up 3-0. Tonight he does it in a similar way, blocks Jaren Jackson's shot to send the Grizzlies to the brink of elimination. And Steph tried to say post-game, I told him, and this is classic, that's what you do. Now, the video is very obvious. He says, you a bad motherfucker. You a bad motherfucker. And I was like, really, Steph? So as we talk about, like, misinterpreting Steph for the second time.
Lost this all credibility. That means he was coming at the Kings.
That means he was coming at Vivek's head, basically.
I kind of wish that Steph, I mean, at what point, and this is Steph, I'm sure, is an avid tampering listener. At what point is Steph just lean into Steph? You're an old man now. Like, I don't mean that, you know, as a pejorative. You've been doing this a long time. Let's lean into the edgy side and not pretend that it's not there.
Yeah, it's because what he is as like a global brand with Under Armour. And when he gets in the press conference settings, he does try to be a little bit buttoned up. But even this series, he's been making some sly comments about Dylan Brooks at times. And when he had, remember when he poked it away from Ja Morant in game one?
Yeah.
And he was mad that Ja Morant had said to Kuminga, he can't guard me. And he yelled down at the Warriors bench, I locked that shit up. And he was right next to Morant. And he went, I locked that shit up.
When he hit that late three tonight. And then Steph, Klay, Draymond, and I guarantee it was not accidental, their little celebration when the game was unofficially decided was like circling Dylan Brooks, like all in his space and his energy.
Can I say?
Fred Katz is here now.
I'm here now.
Katz?
I don't think it takes any courage to go after Dylan Brooks right now. I think it takes courage to stand up for Dylan Brooks right now.
Is that what you wrote?
Because Ja Morant is currently standing up for him on Twitter. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
I did. That would have been an incredible take if that's what I wrote. No, that is not what I wrote. I think Dylan Brooks is the easy target. I thought he was going to say,
that's not what I wrote. I roasted Dylan Brooks. Yeah,
that would get reads, a headline in defense of Dylan Brooks.
That might get reads.
I already spoiled your villain Brooks nickname, by the way.
Oh, well, that's fine. Yeah. I'm good with that.
I gave you credit. Yeah. It's all right. Mike Brown did that to Chris DeMarco tonight, right? He comes in and was really going through the, like, Chris DeMarco post-game conversation. How do you think his joke landed, by the way?
He got it there.
He did.
What's funny, though, so if anybody didn't hear it, Mike Brown talks about how Chris DeMarco, Warriors assistant coach, goes in the locker room. And what it took a moment to kind of translate and understand is that he – and I forget the exact play calls he
– You're saying like red 99.
Yeah, but you got to do like classic football calls, like blue 42. Yeah. And Mike didn't do that. Mike picked out like pink 727. Like, what? Like, this was a little odd.
And then he went like fullback dive, hell of a football game.
Yeah. He's like, oh, we just gave it to the fullback, you know, and then we kicked a field goal at the end. So the point of the story landed. It was, I mean, whether it was that anecdote or all over the arena, the word of the night was ugly. That was the word. Joe Lacob, we had a great chat with Joe in the hallway afterwards. Joe called it ugly. I actually,
that was one of the toughest games I've ever had to watch.
I'm still
trying to recover from Steven Adams calling me a wanker.
Oh, that was to you. I didn't know that was your back and forth.
Who else is he going to call a wanker?
I feel like he probably called several people in the arena tonight wankers.
You know him well enough. Don't be calling
maybe that. Draymond after a box out.
Don't be calling that man large. You know what kind of response you're going to get.
Yeah, I might have goaded him into
it. Good Lord.
That might have happened.
This is up all night like your old podcast. This is the X-rated tampering. Fred's out here calling Steven Adams large.
It was an ugly game. And you know what? I'm going to try to get us back on the rails in this live version. It was an ugly game. And that's what Memphis wanted. You know, Memphis likes the final score tonight. Now, they wish they were on the flip side of you know, but 101-98, they almost would probably be like, yeah, we prefer more like 92-89. But
real quick, since we like sharing color from the evening, since, you know, there's a reason we're out here and trying to make the most of this access. You got Gary Payton the second with the injury, of course.
Did you see him post game?
I did.
Huge brace.
Got boxed out by Marcus Thompson, man. I was trying to catch Gary, and here comes Marcus.
Welcome to Chase. Yeah.
I made the mistake, and this is, you know, as my fellow Tesla brother over here, Fred, you know when you leave a little too much space in the lane and you think that people are going to respect the space, and then they just pop right in. That was Marcus with Gary Payton II. I was like chilling, trying to get Gary, and Marcus was like, "Nah, you ain't close enough. I'm getting in here." Regardless, Gary has got the brace, and you know, looked to be in good spirits, saying hello to people, and then made his way out. I saw his dad on the way out. His dad also choosing the word of the evening, ugly, kind of a lighter moment with one of the ushers where he was just kind of laughing. He's just like, it wasn't pretty. It was ugly, but they got the win, you know, so people were happy. And especially because this, I guess maybe we'll spin it this way. This Warriors team, obviously, you know, beyond trying to get the best of these young Grizzlies, has got actual championship aspirations. You have the two layers to their challenge right now. You have the let's survive Memphis. And then there's the, like, the fewer games, the better. 3-1 is a hell of a lot better than 2-2.
Well, the league has 3-2-2s and 1-3-1. The Warriors are the closest team now in the league to the conference finals. That's huge, particularly because you mentioned no Gary Payton. And, like, there was – if you rewind a few days when it's 1-1 coming back here and Phoenix looks like they're railroading Dallas, it was looking like this might go 6-7. They'd already lost a huge defensive component, and Phoenix was going to be sitting there for a week waiting for them. Now they can get it done before Phoenix. They can go get it done 2 days from now and wait out what might be a 7-game series.
We need to give the mic to Fred.
We do. We do.
Okay, I have a Warriors question for the Warriors experts. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, you have the floor. If you want to, ping pong it back to us, you can.
I'm ping ponging. All right. Dylan Brooks has gotten a lot of crap. He went 5 for 19. Jaren Jackson went 0 for 7. Curry went from 3. Curry went 4 for 14 from 3. Klay Thompson has had too many games where he doesn't look like Klay Thompson in this series. He was 0 for 7, and there have been games in this series. They're up 3-1 right now. But there have been games in this series where they have not looked like the Warriors, and they've just eked out the ugly win, right? Like game one, they won, but they kind of shouldn't have won, right? And like this, you know, game three was the game where it was like everything was rolling. They scored 142 points. They won by 30. The offense looked like the Warriors' offense, and they were just completely and totally rolling. But like Klay didn't quite look like himself. They've had some games where they've just kind of had to squeak by. Memphis didn't have Ja tonight. Their offense was totally, I think, discombobulated because of that. Like, let's say they're going to win this series. They're up 3-1. They're going to play either Dallas or Phoenix the next round. I would guess Phoenix, but you know, who knows? What's your concern level for basically their consistency, and more specifically for Klay, who's like still getting his footing back and is capable of looking awesome, but is also obviously capable of like really not looking awesome.
It was weird as Klay had like a great series against the Nuggets where it was like all catch and shoot, like really like smart offense from him. Was back to his old self. He had that game 4, I think it was 32 points on 4 dribbles. And then suddenly this series, he's dribbling up a lot. And when he's dribbling now, it's like usually bad. It's leading to, you know, 14-foot leaners, or tonight, remember, he's going into traffic and the length is bothering him, and Kyle Anderson's just picking off pretty much all of his passes. So I think there's somewhat of a concern for him, but I think he is going to benefit from getting away from Memphis's defense and just what they do. Steph's shot has left him in this 3 games. At one point, he hit some late, but I think there was a stretch where he was like 6-27 over like an 11-quarter stretch. You'd mostly just assume that he'll rediscover the shot. Jordan Poole has elevated what they can be offensively. I think one of the problems, and you're seeing it in this series, what you thought was emerging in the Denver series was this lineup, this, you know, death lineup 2.0, death in maxes, as Tim Kawakami walks by us.
PK.
Was like this juggernaut, right? Remember, it was like plus 29 in the first 2 Denver games. It was like, oh my God, they found another one of these units. Yeah. We've discovered in this series, like that was very Denver related. And if you are bigger, yeah, like
they weren't nickname worthy yet.
Well, it's not just that. Yeah. It's also that like there are multiple guys you can go at defensively in that lineup.
Yeah.
And Denver didn't have the players to go at them. Denver doesn't have those guards who are going to just like, yeah, we're just going to kill you and attack you like that. Like Phoenix, I feel like would have a lot of offensive
They would just play, you know, pick your poison and go after Poole and
Dallas too. They would probably just have Luka find someone to attack, and if not, you second side swing to Brunson, and then he tries to do it.
So that creates some issues for them. Where, you know, is it Gary Payton was maybe one of the answers to that. Was like, at times you can go Gary Payton. They were starting him and said, well, you know, cracked elbow, he's out of the options. Otto Porter has suddenly, you know, turned into the shooter they thought he was going to be while doing all the other stuff. So he's an option there. With the awkwardness, and you saw it tonight. I mean, even when they put Clay back in for Otto Porter with 4 minutes left, you're sitting there like, sure, that's the right sub. Like, you want Poole in. Do you want Clay in? But they're going to ride with Clay. And like, it's going to, like, Clay cannot play as poorly in this series in the next round. He can't. I don't know if he will or not, but they don't get by Phoenix if this is the Clay they get, or the Curry, really.
This is a little in the weeds, but this is up your Warriors expert alley. Does Mike Brown have an affinity for Damian Lee?
Yes, to answer your question. But also they have, and Fred's seen it, they've slowly started to use Damian Lee more in this series because they've wanted to stay small. You know, Kuminga, they keep trying. Tonight he only got, he starts, he gets 5 minutes. Yeah. You never see him again. Bielitsa, they've decided, cannot be used in this series. They have to.
JTA.
I mean, he's been buried for 3 months, except for like every game for the last, if they have a defensive possession with like 13 on the clock, he like runs to the scorer's table for it. But, you know, without Payton, they want to go smaller in this series. They're afraid of their bigs in this series. Damian Lee is honestly, Steve has a bigger affinity for Damian Lee, and the Curry family does as well. So, but like you said, that's a little in the weeds.
Just goes back to what I told you earlier. Take care of the superstars.
Damian Lee would not like this conversation.
Yeah. Cut that out. That was not very nice. He's carved his lip. He's an NBA player.
Yeah. He's a nice player.
I actually think, like, you know, it's.
No, I respect the hell out of Damian. Yeah. That's a tough burden to carry, and he's here longer than people thought he'd be, and he's got skills.
I love this backtracking. I feel like a jerk right now. I respect the hell out of the guy I just took a pot shot at.
I voted for him for most improved.
Most improved.
Yeah. MVP, actually.
What else?
Try to pretend I'm a nice guy.
What else from?
Okay, is it? I thought this series was going to be so fun. It's not fun.
Fred's not having fun. Fred wants to go home.
I thought I was going to have so much fun with you guys. But you're
complaining about being on the road?
You're both awful. No, I'm enjoying being here. I'm enjoying doing my job. That's not what I mean. I have a great job and it's very fun. I love my job. But this series has not been that fun.
The injuries and the bickering have...
Bickering's good. That's good comedy.
No,
it's the bickering hasn't been good bickering. It's been kind of embarrassing bickering.
Totally. It's
on one side.
Yeah, but slightly. I mean, and like, you know, look, Steve is great with the media. And I that organization was incredibly pissed about the Dylan Brooks foul. But Steve, I think, and you hear this from the Memphis side, they believe like a little bit of a grandstanding from like broke the code type stuff from Steve. They didn't like that press conference from him. And I think Steve's.
But who didn't like it?
Memphis didn't. I mean, you could see it with the way they're tweeting, broke the code, and what's the code? Like, that was Steve putting that out into the universe by really going after one of their guys.
Trash talk is fun. Bickering's not fun. Trash, you don't say when you're, like, in the same room as, like a couple that's been together too long and they don't really like each other, and they're bickering. You don't say, oh, look at them trash talking. Like, this is like you're in the room with that awkward couple and they're making passive aggressive comments about each other. And you're like, I don't need to be around this energy.
And we thought Memphis was going to, you know, it was going to be a series where it's like what I liked was game one. Like, he can't guard me from Jaw. Like, you know, Jaw's scoring and he's trash talking. That's good. The whole, like, the way they tried to get Jordan Poole suspended basically twice in this series was awesome.
We talked about it in the press room, and I feel like I'm kind of like in the minority here, but the Dylan Brooks press conference got covered as if all he said was, you know, if I could take it back, I would. And I was there, and I have a note in my, I'm shamelessly self-promoting in my column about how, like, I mean, Dylan coming out and saying, I don't know what Steve meant by broke the code, I thought was dismissive and was not a good look. And I did ask him, like, okay, well, I guess tell him that he meant that when a player's airborne, that you should move differently, and tried to push him a little bit on that. And he kind of cast it aside. So to your point about the bickering, whatever description we want to put on it, I didn't actually think Dylan was, he was mildly remorseful, but then fairly edgy when it comes to the way the Warriors reacted.
Yeah. And then the other part of what Fred's talking about of this series not maybe living up to what we thought it was going to be. I, you know, a lot of people thought this was going to be the series of the second round. Now we're to the point that it's probably going to be the one that's done the quickest. Memphis just hasn't lived up to what the Warriors are. Some of that very much is Ja now being out, but it's 3-1. And I mean, I think through four games, Ja or not, the belief is the Warriors are the better team. And I didn't know that we would know that this early in the series.
Yeah, I don't think it's – I mean, yeah, it's Ja being out for sure. They're not as composed as Golden State. They're just not. Like,
and
like,
we saw that in the first round, right?
Definitely. It was just that Minnesota was even less composed than Memphis. I mean, like, Jaren Jackson Jr., for example, is going to be a hell of a defender. Like, he can do everything that you want defensively, especially when they play him at the four. Like, tonight, I didn't think it was a coincidence that he fouled less tonight and he was better tonight when they started Steven Adams at the five. You look at his foul rate when he plays the four, he averages, like way fewer fouls per 36 minutes when he plays the four compared to when he's playing next to Steven Adams. And it's no coincidence. He just doesn't have those responsibilities. He doesn't have to play as recklessly. And I thought we saw that tonight, but there are other times where just like over fouling and he can't be there. And they're not the same defense when they don't have him. We've seen shot selection problems from them, general composure problems like that Dylan Brooks step back three when Memphis is up one with a minute 11 left in that game tonight. And Dylan Brooks steps back from three, right?
Yeah.
And then
shot
even
with like one arm.
Yeah. It was
his shot looks horrible. Yeah.
His shot is weird. It's like a weird release. Yeah. But he's not historically a terrible three-point shooter. No. He's just been a bad one this year. But he's normally a 35. He's a middle of the road three-point shooter usually. But like we've just seen those sorts of composure problems from Memphis, which it's just a problem this year. Like they're just really young. They're just really young. I mean, I think they're going to try to continue to just string along this core for a really, really long time. I don't think they're going to make some sort of ginormous impact move. I think they're going to try to string along this core, maybe bring in some vets on the side and try to win with this group. And like, this is their first time making a run, and it's looking like the first time making a run. It's pretty damn rare for a team to do what the Suns did and just go to the finals in your first big run.
And you need Chris Paul to do that. That was Fred's obit on the Memphis Grizzlies season. I need to get to Warriors Plus Minus podcast. Is there anything else you guys before
you haven't plus minus yet?
No.
I thought you already had.
No, that's why Tim Kawakami's in the crowd over here.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
You're not waiting. You're doing pickleball injury therapy.
Doing that also. Yeah. Combination of those two.
Yes. I mean,
we can see Scott Foster, by the way, speaking of pickleball.
Oh, that's a question for Tim Kawakami to come on Tampering.
Zarba, maybe.
He's calling for Zach Zarba in game five. We'll see Scott Foster in that Phoenix Warriors West Finals if it materializes. How about that?
Jack Harlow, number one fan.
By the way, I will tell that quick on the Tampering Pod and maybe close us out to the second half of the podcast. This ends the first half of our podcast. You saw the Jack Harlow music video from Scott Foster, correct? So I was in Memphis for game two, and I get to the elevator to go down, and Scott Foster's in my elevator. I was like, oh, okay, odd, whatever. We're all both going to the same game, so it's really not that odd, I guess. Sheridan in Memphis. We get down to the lobby, and three referees and, like, other people are around, and they're like, And they're like, you ready for this? You ready to do this, Scott? I'm not part of the video, but I was walking into them setting up the video. And I didn't know it at the time. I was like, why are these refs waiting? Like, why are these people? Like, they're pumped. They're like, you ready to do this, Scott? I was like, man, they're pumped for game two. And then I left.
That's funny, man.
And then I watched the video later. And
this is a pod, or to be honest with you, I'm going to give story ideas away. The referees that are being promoted in an interesting way right now, that the league is clearly making a conscious choice. They have put them on the Wired segment occasionally, which is new. They did the Jack Harlow video. As somebody, and I know that I'm a broken record when it comes to, like, you know, my bubble stories, but like as somebody who got to know the refs for the first time in the bubble, they're a good bunch. I do think humanizing them, the players might not like it, but it's entertaining. They're funny. They can be funny. Scott's a hilarious dude that, you know, I know Chris Paul hates him, but you know, anyway, that's part of this whole campaign that is clearly happening.
All right. I got to send this out of here. We will talk next week. Probably be talking conference finals next week. Should be fun. So, or I should say, we're sending you to an ad break in the second half of our podcast where we debate the MVP. Talk to you in a couple minutes.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23. For a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to the back end of the Tampering Podcast here at the Auxiliary Media Room at Chase Center. It is so good to see y'all in person. I know it's weird for the listeners because this is the second half, but I got to keep it fresh. You know, we normally jump on Zoom. My guys are here. Slater, Katz, let's talk about the news of the day, but in the context of the playoffs. MVP and Coach of the Year came out, and as expected, Nikola Jokic wins the MVP. Monty Williams wins for the Suns, Coach of the Year. And here's where I want to take this discussion, because we want to hit on Sixers Heat, Suns Mavs, those games coming up tomorrow, obviously. But you know, Joker wins, and of course, the discussion immediately becomes on social media and elsewhere, you know, is he deserving? Because for the second year in a row, his team is home by the time the award comes out. Although, was that the case last year?
Yes. No, maybe not. No, but when was he named? They were second round. They got swept in the second round. I think it was clear that, like, the Suns were railroading
them.
Thank you.
Yeah, bad memory. Okay, nonetheless, he's home right now.
Same story, though, right? No chance title.
Well, like I sarcastically, you know, texted both y'all, is he's home riding horses in Serbia. Joel Embiid is carrying the Sixers to a split at this point in this series against Miami. The question, I guess, is this, like, how do we deal with this annual discussion where folks forget that the voting happens, you know, obviously before the playoffs, that it's regular season based? I mean, now some folks, you know, are acting as if we should preemptively handicap how these teams are going to do and kind of demerit certain candidates based on how, you know, their lack of playoff potential, if you will. I'm fine with my Jokic vote, but the optics are always tricky. It's like back in the day when Dirk Nowitzki, you know, won MVP and got bounced by the Warriors. I don't know what the solution is, and we'll get into this in a minute. Shout out Nick Van Exel. I do not think that having players vote is the answer, because he kind of tweeted that others should start to vote. But how do you guys just see this debate?
I mean, I don't know. I don't really see an issue with it. The job is not to predict how a team does in the playoffs. I mean, what I think is kind of, quite frankly, it's weird, is that we've gone back. There are people who I think are like smart people who I respect who make an actual argument that the MVP has gotten away from what it used to be, which was just kind of best player on the best team, and that maybe we should go back to that sort of logic. I think that's so weird, because the reason that trend happened for so many years wasn't because it was the best way to think of the award. It was because you couldn't see guys for most of the time.
Like when you were voting on Moses Malone in 1983 or whatever year he won MVP, it was because you saw Moses Malone when he came to town and he was really good. And as a way of just kind of evening it up, you voted on, well, he was the best player and on the best team. Actually, that's a bad example because Moses Malone won on a 40-something win, 40-something win team. But I think now with all of us having league pass, I think even the least informed voter of 2022 is probably more informed than most voters of 1976, because you catch a game on national TV, you end up, and the more informed voters are sitting around watching league pass, looking at way more numbers that they have as resources than they used to. It's just like, this is of course the better way to do it. We're a more informed voting base, just like we're a more informed fan base for people who aren't associated with the league. So, like, I don't know. I
think that does lead to a bit more groupthink where, like, you know, the more high-profile voters or talking heads start leaning towards one candidate, and a lot of times everyone's like, well, he's saying it, I'm going with it. Because, I mean, as you know, as informed as we may be, as statistically, you know, as it may be shoved down our throat, most voters ain't on League Pass nightly, you know, gobbling up Denver against the Pelicans or whatever. But my thing is, like, every damn year there's going to be some controversy. You know, Steve Nash was like a controversial, you know, MVP. Every MVP is controversial.
It is. And I don't think this colleague of ours would mind me sharing this good chat we had today at lunch. Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports and I had lunch and we talked about the
Plow. Was it at Plow?
It was Plow. Oh, we doing free advertising now. Plow was good. We had a little hard time with the bill. They tried to charge us 17 different times, so we got it worked out. Don't worry, Athletic. I kept the money tight. I think that I'm getting too loose. Wow, now we got the band playing in the background.
Oh, it's fun. This is the arena vibes. I get. Yes, and you're going to get some post-game too, by the way, which you've already listened to, actually, at this point.
Right. So Vinny made the point that essentially since 84, MVPs, of where their team was not of great consequence, that the list kind of begins and ends with Russell Westbrook. Before that, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was MVP without even getting to the playoffs. You mentioned Moses Malone. So it had happened. But the question I think becomes, is there any responsibility to say, even if Jokic had an amazing year, that, you know, we're going to temper that a little bit. And maybe the tiebreaker goes to the guy whose team looks like it's on track to be better. I'm kind of torn on it because if you ask me right now, if I'm being honest, if Jokic, he's going to be in the discussion again next year. If it's close next year, there is probably going to be part of me that says it's a little bit like Giannis when he won it two times in a row and we all kind of started cooling on him. I'm not trying to pretend or like endorse the process.
He's wrong because the year that everyone said, nope, he can't be it anymore, he goes and wins the title.
Okay, so he should have been. So Jokic shouldn't have got it?
Retroactively, if everything, again, is going to be retroactive. Anyway.
No, but it's hard. It's an imperfect process, obviously, because it all comes out during these playoffs. And now, again, you got Joel, you know, playing his backside off and looking great. And so folks want to sing the song.
It's the implication that people are supposed to be able to predict the future is outrageous to me.
I'm going to push back a little bit. We knew Denver was not headed for any championship.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was saying like Warriors in five, Warriors in six. For sure.
No one who voted for Jokic, I didn't have a vote. No one who voted for Jokic was out there rallying, being like, Denver's going to make a run. No one said that. They did it because the fact that the guys around Jokic weren't great didn't deter them.
We're terrible. Which, by the way, like, I cover the Warriors, as you guys know, on a daily basis. Like, go ask them about Nikola Jokic after that first round series. They're not like, you know, shouldn't have been MVP. They're like, holy shit, that guy is tough to deal with.
Well, and just to be like a total talk radio guy, I'm going to now argue against myself. You ready for this? Yeah. So the thing is, as I told Vinny at lunch, and again, these votes are public. So Vinny actually voted for Giannis. He had Giannis, Jokic, and then Embiid was his ballot. I was telling Vinny, like, the narrative on Embiid as it relates to the playoffs gets broken. If you remember that for the vast majority of the year, he was neck and neck with Jokic when it comes to their story. And it, admittedly, it drove me crazy. I've told you guys this before, how a lot of media covered Embiid and the Sixers as if the loss of Ben Simmons was somehow more significant than the loss of Jamal Murray, let alone Michael Porter Jr. Embiid and Jokic had damn near blueprint seasons of one another, not statistically, but their kind of team profile for most of the year. And everybody would say, oh yeah, but Philly's
third in the East and Denver's only sixth. Well, that's great, but their records are damn near the same for the entire year. So that's where this whole line of thinking kind of gets sideways. But again, it's the optics. I don't know what the solution is. To go back real quickly to the Nick Van Exel tweet. So he says, time to let others start voting. And I happen to look up the story by the Associated Press's Tim Reynolds, wrote back in January that the players for the sixth consecutive season had, I don't know how else to say it, but they had essentially showed their ass when it comes to why they're not responsible with voting. They have 25% of the All-Star vote and consistently vote for guys who have no business being in the All-Star game. Last season, less than 50% of the player voters had, who was it, Embiid, on their All-Star team. Joel Embiid. Less than half of the
players.
There's
always super wonky votes, too, like for friends.
On your beat, it's the Zaza Pachulia rule is why the players started getting a vote, because the social media influencers out there in Georgia.
Will there be an Andrew Wiggins rule now?
Probably not.
Maybe. I don't know.
We need to expand this conversation because we just got a celebrity to come up in our presence. Logan Murdoch of The Ringer, who I've known since he was 2.5 years old or somewhere abouts there. That was about 9 years ago, I think.
Yep.
Get off your phone, youngin.
Hey, what's going on? I don't know what I can and can't say, but I just want to say that I love all of y'all, man. I love Slater.
You can't come within 5 feet and then act like you're not allowed to come on the pod.
Yeah.
I think I can come on the pod.
You came in the energy room. You got
what's popping, man? You know what I'm saying? We out here, man. You know, man. This is, we're ahead. Do they know where we're at right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Man, we at Chase Center out here chilling, man. Woo, 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 ha. You know, I just want to say that I'm like, I just want to say, I am. Yeah, you must not have been listening. I just want to say that I love Anthony Slater. You know, he, you know, all them long days on the road, man, you know, he was just hella cool. I don't know if I can, is that a curse? Is hella a curse on here?
I just swore.
Oh, okay, man. He was such a fucking good dude. I just want to say that.
Your redneck voice?
I don't know. This is on a phone. I don't know if I can edit that out. No, it's not my. I don't. That's kind of wild. Okay.
It's kind of pejorative. I mean, it is
pejorative. We're all good. We're all good on this R-rated podcast. Do we want to get his unfiltered take on this MVP debate?
Logan, MVP.
Is it a flawed process? That would be. Is the MVP voting flawed?
Jokic is kind of bad. In the context of
Is it flawed? In what ways?
Nick Van Exel says it's time to let other people start voting, and I was just railing on player votes.
Well, here's the problem with player votes, man. I think it should – players, one, they don't watch all the games, no matter how much they say they do. And two, there's an inherent bias from players. And that's why we have a player vote and we have a media vote. So we can have a combination of the two. And I think I like what we have so far, man. I think it's cool. I think people forget that we used to have a player vote, an ultimate player vote. And in the 70s, that didn't work out so well. There's a reason why, you know, we have a media vote as well. So
I mentioned the player votes on All-Stars, and just to keep adding substance there, Kawhi Leonard got 2 votes this year, didn't play. Ben Simmons got 2 votes this year. John Wall, TJ Warren, Michael Carter Williams all got votes. And only 4 players. I mentioned Embiid not being on even half of the player ballots. The only 4 players in the entire league that were on more than 50% of the ballots were Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron James, and Jokic.
I have one thing to say on that. Do you remember the All-Star voting process and who got picked last?
I do.
Do you know why he got picked last?
Petty. Yeah.
Very petty. It was a petty party.
Yeah.
I'm talking about James Harden being called last. That is a window into what would happen if we just ceded all control to the players for MVP and awards. And that's my TED Talk. I got the shit to do. I love y'all. Shout out to y'all, man. I love Fred. I love Slater. And I love Sam Amy. All right, I got to go. See y'all. Peace.
It was all different, like, tones for how much we love. Yes. Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's not a voter block that doesn't have the bias he's talking about. I think there's definitely bias in media, and Twitter or fan vote can just be wonky.
Your groupthink comment is legit. We got to be careful about groupthink.
One thing that I'm, like, kind of torn on, and – So I used to be
a huge voting ballots should be public sort of guy. And I used to be absolutely insistent voting ballots should be public because you need the accountability. And I still think you need the accountability. I haven't reversed on that at all. But I am a believer that, like, the groupthink thing is real. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we got our first ever unanimous MVP after they made the rule that balloting has to become public and who votes for whom has to become public.
Steph Curry didn't deserve it, says Fred Katz.
I think
people are, like, more afraid than ever, not even just because of, hey, you know, the smartest versions of the talking heads are saying this, but also like, hey, this is going public. And not only is it going public, but this is going like viral public, the way we live now, where, you know, if you feel like you have a controversial vote that you really believe in, I'm sure you're in the back of your head like, well, if I put this, it's going to be a screenshot. It's going to be on.
Well, and then you might run into the occasional, I mean, let's be honest about our industry, that you do have occasional folks who would look at it and say, oh, I could make some real noise if I'm just going against the grain, you know, and they might not even believe that vote. Shout out to friend and colleague G. Wash, Gary Washburn, Boston Globe, years and years ago, voted for Carmelo Anthony over LeBron. And that was the beginning, I believe, of when they published votes. And Gary did it the right way. Like, he stood on it.
And he believed it.
He wrote a column about why he voted for Melo. Right. That was 13.
But it's going to add to your workload that time of year. It's going to jam you
especially
up.
Especially now. I mean, Jesus, such a viral society now. Yeah. Yeah. Well, people
just want to clown people on the internet. And so there needs to be accountability for sure. But at the same time, it's like, I think you get some, like, with the wonkier votes also comes how people actually feel, not just the vote that I feel the least embarrassed to defend, you know?
Yeah. All right. I will throw us to our second ad break and then backside. Let's just quickly do the two series, Heat, Sixers and Mavericks Suns, both 2-2.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. We did not touch on Coach of the Year, but congrats to Monty Williams of the Suns.
Touch on him now.
Monty, Taylor Jenkins was my number two of the Grizzlies, and Eric Spoelstra. And I think that was the final ballot. I think all well-deserving. Ime Udoka was fourth, and his Celtics are doing good work against the Bucks. But you want to start on the Sixers Heat side with Spo. It's a series. I don't believe in the old adage of, you know, no series doesn't start until somebody loses on the road. But it feels that way right now, especially with – I mean, Doc Rivers had a great line when somebody asked him if – how do you keep the momentum going heading into game five? And he said, well, Joel's going to be on the plane. So that's how the momentum continues.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, the Sixers are 2-0 with Joel Embiid in this series. And Joel Embiid will play in game five. I mean, so whose two wins in the series are more believable to translate to the final three games? I would say
it's gotta be the last two.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I would say, like, that was a little bit of an outlier game from Harden. It seemed to me he was, like, drilling the step back threes. Maybe he's back, but that wasn't.
See the tweet. I second time since January 25th that he's had 30 plus in a game. And folks, like, even Barkley and those guys on TNT were talking about, oh, he went to the Wayback Machine. And so, like, the Harden slander is real and folks are acting like he's 42.
So, thing with Harden that I'm thinking about as I watched that game the whole way is, did he even if we're going to be as disrespectful as possible and call it the Wayback Machine. Did he go to the Wayback Machine, or was he just hitting a bunch of his step backs? Like a lot of those,
he got to the rim. He got to the rim a couple times, really he closed that fourth quarter. He hit some huff step backs.
Yeah, it was jumpers. The jumpers were going in, which is great. Those are going to come.
What are we calling them now? The machine gun dribbles. I mean, he had a few.
You saw it in him, but they're definitely still that. I'm not sure he'll ever get the burst back. Maybe he needs an off season of training. But I just, to me, Embiid needs to dominate the last two out of the last three, I guess we could say. Because he didn't dominate in Philly, obviously, hell.
It's a lot of hype for I'm not taking it anyway. It was a needed performance at the perfect time. But a ton of hype for a 31-point game. In fact, as we sit here at Chase Center, one of the thoughts I had was like, you know, with Harden, 31 is like, oh my God, he got 31. And Jordan Poole, who's like the third best player on this team, is out here doing it on the regular basis.
The other thing you got to note with this series, normally I have the numbers in front of me because I scream at Sam about telling me the topics in advance so I can call up stuff. But I have just your beautiful faces in front of me now, so I can't tell you the exact numbers. But first two games, Philly shot like 20% from three. And these last two, they're hitting everything. And it's unbelievable what a difference that can make when those threes go in. That said, it is not a coincidence that they are getting open standstill looks on the perimeter when the greatest down-low scoring threat in the world happens to be standing there drawing everybody in. The impact that Embiid has on a game beyond whether he's scoring 21 or 26 or 32 is insanity, because you just have to throw everybody at him, even a defense like Miami. And the amount that it has to concentrate, like Bam, specifically on him, versus letting Bam roam and just have that freedom to be able to move around defensively. Like, it just changes the way Miami, the stuff that Miami can do and the freedom with which they can use their defense, whether they're in their zone or they're in a man. It's just totally different. And it's crazy to me that he, after the concussion and just literally breaking his face,
and his shooting thumb is like really messed up right now too. Yeah. Like, will get surgery in the offseason. No, it's impressive. And that's why he should have been MVP. No, sorry. And honestly, like, Miami's just, they don't have top level offensive talent. I mean, Jimmy Butler, obviously, what do you have, 40, I think. But Lowry's looking hampered. I mean, they continue to list like 9 players questionable on their list. It's kind of classic Miami, but he does not look like himself. Duncan Robinson has been, you know, now there's like a call, hey, maybe throw Duncan Robinson on the court and he'll hit 6 threes and change the game. I would just say this to close out. I'd lean Philly to win the series. Where are you guys at going into the last three?
Philly.
I think I'm still Miami.
They do have home court. Quickly, because I got to get to something for work in about 5 minutes. Do you guys have thoughts on Phoenix, Dallas before we head out?
I don't know what to think, because Chris Paul is now doing some of that Jekyll and Hyde stuff that happens every so often for him in the playoffs. And then, you know, the drama with his family and the fans, and just, you know, it just seems like 5 minutes ago that he was hitting 14 out of 14. And making, you know, more history. So up in the air, but I'll still give it to the Suns to find their way.
Dallas's small lineup is really good. Like, that small lineup that really hurt Utah, it is hurting Phoenix. And Phoenix's defense is, you know, we gave Utah's perimeter defenders so much deserved crap for just like letting all those Dallas guard, you know, Brunson and Luka specifically, just be able to slice to the middle and find corner threes and all that. But that Dallas small lineup is working against Phoenix too, which is a very different type of defense, and they're disciplined. And they're really good. Jason Kidd's done a good job there.
Yes. I was just about to go to Kidd. He just seems like he's tactically like figuring stuff out, which I think, you know, you look back at his career and you're like, yeah, of course. I mean, one of the smartest players ever, right? He's going to figure out all these tactical things. But then you remember his history as a head coach. There was a lot of doubt, a lot of skepticism about the hire for several reasons. But this isn't just like, oh, wow, Jason Kidd's performing these playoffs. He had an incredible regular season. Remember, he turned them into like a top five defense when everyone going into the season is like, they're going to be a bottom 10 defense.
My last thought there, even though I just picked Suns, from an energy standpoint, I don't know if you guys caught the other day during the game that they were talking about the fact that the Mavs bench was up for the entire game. And the Suns bench was, you know,
so pretty, much they were fined.
Yes. Well, this is the game after they kept it going. And they, you know, you in the playoffs, you run into these moments when the chemistry is there. And the Suns have like a we're going to be here till June mentality, which is fine. But if you take anything for granted, you might run into a team
that is ready to punch you in the mouth and doesn't want to go home. And who knows? Maybe that's what's going to happen here.
And now you have a massive pivotal game five, which, you know, should be interesting. Anything else before Sam gets us out of here?
No, we're good, brother. I know it's a backwards pod this
week. Should I make you guys predict Warriors-Grizzlies game four, and then we'll see on the front side if either of you are right?
Ja Morant will not play. That's what I predict. I'm going.
We'll find out very soon.
Yes. No, I got Warriors, even though the Grizz were 20-5, as Ja actually shouted at Jaren Jackson Jr. at his shoot-around press conference, reminding the media of what their record without Ja this year. The playoffs is different. Warriors seem to be on their way again, so I got them winning this thing.
Yeah, Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I want to be the one that says Grizzlies, just so, you know, if it happens, I look like an absolute genius. Yeah, there you go.
This is going to be like
Carmelo Anthony.
This podcast is going to be like the memento of podcasts. Yeah. We podcast the post game at the beginning of the podcast, and then we close the podcast with our predictions.
Pre-game prediction.
But it speaks well to our lack of ego, because we're putting ourselves out there in the kind of way where the listeners are all now
possibly at us. Possibly the most predictable game of the playoffs
so far, and certainly of this round. Well, the non-Embiid games in Miami.
Slater's got to get off to Steve Kerr.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.